The tech help phoning with Fevzi Turkalp, our gadget detective. Lines open for that on 0808 100 5100. If you've got a question about the technology you need to keep in touch with people at the moment, that's how this started, with people having lots of questions about Zoom and FaceTime and Skype and all those things. If you've got questions about that, please let's have them. But it's broadened out over the weeks. It gets more and more popular, this, as people have asked about streaming services. We're using those much more in the lockdown situation. People have got questions about laptops and antivirus and all sorts. What would you like to know? 0808 100 5100. Morning, Fevzi.
Good morning. How are you?
Yes, great. Thanks for being with us. I'm well. We're all keeping well. How about you?
Yes, spiffing.
This week, I had a proud dad moment, which I'm determined to share with you.
Oh,
when my daughter, who's 11, suddenly burst into tears and said, "Dad, I've somehow managed to delete all the photos from my phone." This is a huge thing for an 11-year-old. And me and her 13-year-old brother, through looking lots of stuff up online and going into YouTube tutorials and this, that and the other, we managed to find an app that retrieved all the photos on the phone. Now, I realise this is probably the easiest and most obvious thing in the world to anyone who knows what they're doing. But to us, this was an enormous achievement.
Yeah, no, it's good. What software did you use, by
now,
the way?
Now, was it something Digger, Disk Digger?
Okay, that one I don't know. There's another one called Recuver, spelled R-E-C-U-V-A.
Right.
Used for phones, tablets, and indeed computers. There's actually various software that will do that, and some is better than the other. But the tip, if that happens on any device, is stop using the device. The more you use the device, once you've deleted something, the more likely it is that the thing is irretrievable.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, what this I realise I'm probably saying obvious things here, but they weren't obvious to me. What this software then did, or app did, was dig through the phone and literally retrieved every photo she's ever taken and deleted since she's had the phone.
Yeah.
Not just recent ones, all of them, thousands of them.
It's amazing. Well, the reason why that works is that on a computer, which a phone is a computer essentially, when you delete something, you don't actually physically delete it. What you're doing is you're deleting the reference to it in the index. So it's a bit like having a book and you tear out the index pages at the back so that it's not easy to find anything. But the pages are still in the book. The difficulty is, and the reason I say stop using it, is that once it's marked as deleted, that physical memory space is then up for grabs. So the more that you run, the more likely it is that something else will eventually physically overwrite it. So, you know, depending on how much memory you have, stuff gets overwritten, then it does tend to become, you know, irrecoverable. So that's one tip, is just stop using it once that happens.
Interesting. On Twitter, Shine a Light tweets to say, "My parents don't have Wi-Fi or the internet, so is there any way we can use any of this technology to keep in touch? They don't have a smartphone, so they've got no smartphone, no internet or Wi-Fi." I'm thinking no, but I might be wrong.
Okay, so if there were a smartphone, you could use the mobile data to create a hotspot. In other words, to use the mobile data coming in, and then it creates a Wi-Fi field that things like tablets and so forth can log on to. If you haven't got that, then the alternative is to buy what's sort of colloquially known as a MiFi. It looks a bit like a bar of soap, and it has a SIM card in it. And what it does is it brings data in using mobile phone data. So you get a SIM with a certain amount of data on it per month. And then that brings the data in via the mobile phone network. And then the little bar of soap device then creates a Wi-Fi hotspot in that area. So data in via cellular, data out via Wi-Fi. Once you've created the Wi-Fi hotspot, then any device that you want to connect to that Wi-Fi will then work. The difficulty is, obviously, you have to choose the data SIM card carefully to make sure that it's adequate for your needs and affordable. But that's essentially the way to do it. You use a SIM card as opposed to something coming in over a cable or your phone line.
Okay, thank you, Shine a Light. Lee's just tweeted to say, "Are you now going to teach your daughter how to back up her photos? If only I could, Lee." That's a very sensible point. You shouldn't have photos you can't delete. They should be backed up somewhere. Is that on some kind of cloud, I suppose, Febsy, is it?
Yeah, so for example, iPhone users have access to something called iCloud. They get a certain amount of storage for free. You can set it such that every time you take a photo, that photo is also sent up into the cloud. And when we say a cloud, we mean, you know, a data center somewhere in the desert with thousands of computers chugging away. The issue with that, of course, is that then you've got your pictures outside your control. And in fact, I don't know if you remember a few years ago when a load of celebrities had their iCloud photos hacked.
Yeah.
But the way that that was done was that they didn't actually hack the celebrities' phones. What they did was they hacked iCloud or the access to iCloud, I should say. So people who had all those compromising pictures didn't know that their phones were set up in such a way that that backups were being made, and they were taking, in some cases, compromising photographs on their phone, thinking, well, it's on my phone, no one else will see it. And what happened was that someone got hold of their iCloud password, accessed it, and published some of the pictures.
0808 100 5100. On this same thing, Laura in Tadley says, in terms of cloud storage, would you recommend iCloud or Google Drive or Dropbox? What would I choose?
Well, okay, so any cloud storage has the potential to be insecure in two ways. One is it's another point of failure where it can be hacked. The other is that the holders of that data in the cloud, be it, you know, Apple or whatever, can receive legal demands from whichever government. So typically in the United States, the US government can demand to see those things. Those services are all pretty good, but what I would suggest is, even where the cloud service offers encryption, what you should do is encrypt, that's to say scramble the data yourself before it's sent up there. Because if, let's say, iCloud says, okay, we're encrypted, that's fine, but they still hold the keys. So if they receive a legal demand or they are hacked, then that information is accessible. However, if you encrypt it physically yourself before you send it, they can encrypt it again. That doesn't matter, because when they decrypt it, all they'll get is the version that was scrambled by you earlier. And that's the real key to it. I mean, iCloud is good. I trust Apple more than some other companies, but that, you know, that's a personal thing, just because their business model tends to be they make their money by charging you lots of money for the hardware, whereas some other companies, their business model is by turning your digital footprint, you know, the information that you give off as you go about your business, they make money by turning that into advertising. So I would say Apple is quite good, but obviously Apple is only an option if you're an Apple user. You know, you can't use iCloud if you're using an Android phone, for example.
Sure.
But they're all good. Norton provides a certain amount of free space as well. I mean, some people who are quite concerned about, you know, having stuff in America, they make sure that they've got European-based cloud services, and they do exist, and some of them, you know, design more for privacy. But you kind of just need to just decide who it is you want to be able to spy on your data, essentially. If you're not comfortable with someone in the US spying on your data, then take it to Europe.
I don't know how whether I'm common in this. I just couldn't care less who's spying on my data, because my data is so boring. I don't mind who sees my photos. They really have nothing, you know?
Andrew, I'll tell you something about that. Everyone thinks that anything that they have, their data, their metadata, that's, you know, the data that we give off, is innocuous. But it is the ability to intelligently combine all the little bits of data that you give off that give a complete image of you, that say, you know, who you are, how old you are, where you live, who your friends are, what your political views are, you know, sexuality, types of relationship, infidelity, everything. They can put it together by looking at a combination of these seemingly innocuous pieces of information.
But I mean, okay, so this is going to sound like the most naive question ever. Why should I care? Why should I worry? Even if they, you know, someone somewhere has taken the time and trouble to add all those, you know, bits of data about me together, what are they going to do with them?
Okay, so there is a concept of privacy, and you know, so although some people say, oh, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear, I would ask those people, if they draw their curtains at night and close the toilet door before using it, there is a concept of privacy, and it's important in any free society that we have the ability to talk to each other without being spied on. You cannot have a free society without having a degree of privacy. You remember, you know, East Germany and the Stasi, where they said one in three people was spying on the other two in three. Now we're not having human spies, but we've all bought and carry around with us the most sophisticated spy device ever created. You've got a mobile phone with a camera, a microphone, a GPS chip, an orientation chip, all sorts of things. It says who you talk to, when you talk to them. You know, and normally it would need a human being or a group of human beings to put all that data together. But now, with artificial intelligence algorithms, it's possible to combine them intelligently and draw inferences. And the other thing that these companies are doing is they are storing literally shed loads of data on you, because they know that in the future they will be able to do things with that data and deduce things from it that they can't now. It's a bit like, you know, they go back to cold cases and dig up DNA that they happen to have, you know, blood splatter or whatever. And then, you know, they can convict someone on a cold case 50 years later, because the DNA techniques didn't exist then, they exist now. In a similar way, these companies are storing all our data now because they know that in the future it's going to be payday for them. And it can subvert the political process. And we saw that before, because, you know, that was a Cambridge Analytica scandal where they worked out people's political leanings, but also what had happened to them. Had they recently lost their job? Were they living in an area of high unemployment? And then they did micro-messaging, so they were able
to target them. Yeah.
So in the past, I'll just say this briefly, in the past, people had party political broadcasts and everyone heard the same message and everyone knew what everyone else was hearing. Now it's different. Everyone gets a tailored message to their own weaknesses, if you like, and no one knows what the other people are being told. So they may promise one group one thing and another group another thing altogether. And, you know, we need to get to a position where our data belongs to us by default, not the companies that have the ability to collect it and store it.
Okay. If you've got a question for Fevzi, we're talking about cloud storage, antivirus, streaming, technology to keep in touch. 0808 100 5100 is my number.
The Andrew Peach Show. BBC.
So it's the Tech Help phone-in with Fevzi Turkhelp. Here's the number. If you've got any technology question, 0808 100 5100, or you can text Barks in your message to 81333. Right, next, Fevzi, the ongoing saga of my laptop, which is struggling to connect to the internet. And I think I've established by a whole process of detective work, following your guidance, it's not the Wi-Fi. Because it has the same problem even if it's connected to the internet by cable. So I think we've ruled out all the sort of Wi-Fi type problems. And I still come back to, should I just wipe the entire laptop and start again with it in the hope that cures it? But I would then need to save the various files and stuff we've got on there first. Is there anything else I can try?
I mean, I think you can do a repair of Windows. So instead of wiping it on purpose and then installing the operating system and all your apps and so forth. And by the way, people who are tech savvy tend to do that as about once a year as spring cleaning, because there's inevitably stuff that gets corrupted and, you know, left behind when you uninstall and all the rest of it. So it's not a bad thing to do, but, you know, if you're not confident, that's quite a time consuming thing. What I would try and do is do a complete backup. If you get to the point where, you know, you are thinking about reinstating the system,
but onto a memory stick or something.
Well, it would be more than a memory stick. It would be an external hard disk drive of some sort, or external SSD. So you can use, there's backup software built into Windows. If you want to get something more sophisticated, then Acronis do some of the best backup software available, but that's not free, but it is affordable. It would be a good investment because you get a lot more flexibility out of that. I think their software is called True Image. And what you can then do, still do the complete backup, but in theory, it's possible to reinstate Windows whilst leaving all your data in situ. The reason why I say back it up is because it is conceivable when you try anything like that it will go wrong and you will end up having to wipe it. But usually what happens is the operating system itself and all its settings are reinstated, but the data is left alone and in place. But do a complete backup. You should do a complete backup anyway, even if you're not doing all these things, because eventually your system will fail. It's not a matter of if it fails, but when it fails. So having a complete backup that you can go back to should it all go wrong is a good idea anyway, but particularly if you're going to do something like a repair of the Windows operating system, then that would be a very wise thing to do, and check that the backup is valid. Most backup software allows you to actually look at the backup and make sure that it's possible to reinstate your system from it.
And how much would a hard drive cost me to be able to do that?
Depends on how much you want to.
Well, it's not much. To be honest, the stuff we're bothered about, it's a few Word documents. You know, it's nothing enormous.
Okay. I would suggest doing... Okay. Well, so something, if it's literally a few Word documents, you could do it onto a memory stick. But I would suggest you do a more comprehensive backup than that. It is possible to actually back up the whole system, including the operating system. And then extract files that you might need from the backup later, and something like Acronis TrueImage can do that. So you can back up the whole system, but then extract key files. You don't have to reinstate the whole system. If I were you, what I would do is buy a small external drive. If you haven't got much need for capacity, 40, £50, something like that, make sure it's got a USB 3 connection on it, assuming that your computer also has USB 3, because that will mean you get a faster transfer rate. So it'd be easier and quicker to back it up and to reinstate it, because USB 3 is much faster than USB 2 or earlier. So that would be the way to go. But it's not a bad thing to do, but I would do a more substantial backup. And drives are cheap now. You know, you can get 1, 2, 3, 4 terabyte drives. So a terabyte is 1,000 gigabytes of data. And they're just getting really cheap, because for backup purposes, the speed is not critical. So you don't have to buy the more expensive SSDs. You can buy the more traditional hard drive technology, which has had to come down a lot in price in order to be worth buying for any reason. So now people who need large capacity backups buy rotating hard drives. For every other use, we tend to use SSDs, which are light hard drives, but no moving parts. Sort
of. Okay. BBC Radio Berkshire, Fevzi's here. Your tech questions on 0808 100 5100. Lillian's in Reading. Morning, Lillian.
Good morning.
What would you like to know, Lillian?
I would just like to know if it's possible at all to transfer photos from my digital camera to my laptop, right, so that I could send an email with a photo.
Sure you can. How do you transfer most easily photos from a digital camera?
Absolutely. It depends on the camera. I mean, some cameras are very smart. They've got Wi-Fi built in, but you can just zap it wirelessly. But assuming that's not the case, what you would do is open the camera, take out the memory card. It's usually an SD memory card. It's about the size of a postage stamp, usually. You just push it in and it pops out, take it out. And then it depends on your computer. If your computer has got a memory card slot built into it that's compatible, you just pop it into there and it appears as an external drive. So it appears as an E drive or an F drive, whatever. And then you can just copy it across into the Windows hard disk. If you do not have a compatible memory slot built in, then you can buy one that just connects to one of your spare USB sockets. And again, depending upon the speed, if the cheap ones are less than a tenner. If you want a super fast one, then you can pay £20 or £30 for that. But what that does is it turns the USB socket, which is one of the rectangular sockets on the side or the back of your computer, into a memory card slot. And it can just read it, and then you just, having transferred it, you pop the card out, pop it back in the camera, and carry on shooting.
I think sometimes you can just get a lead out your camera as well, can't you? I think mine does this. I don't use it very much anymore, but I think my digital camera came with a lead that will connect it to a laptop and do it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So that can work. That can sometimes be a bit slower, depending on, as I say, on the camera and what sort of thing you connect it to. Lillian, I would also say to you that don't just copy across the images that you just need to email at the moment. Copy them all across onto the computer and use the computer as a backup. Because if you were to lose your camera or the data were to be accidentally damaged on the card, you may not have a backup otherwise. So whilst you're at it, copy everything across. It might take, depending on how many pictures, it might take 10, 20, 30 minutes even. But just do it, and then do it at regular intervals after that.
Lillian, does that sound like it's got the answer in there somewhere?
Well, it sounds like it's possible. I will have
it. It's definitely possible, yeah. It's definitely possible. It's only a question of do you have the SD card slot in your computer? That's have you got right. a lead you can connect the camera with, or you might need to buy a new bit of kit? But you can definitely do it.
definitely do it. Oh, that's good. Yes, that's lovely. Thank you very much.
Good luck. Good luck. Let us know how you get on.
Yes, I will.
Thank you very much, Lillian. Have a good weekend. Fevzi, thanks very much for this morning. Are you going to mention smart scales? This is really useful info for people who are isolating and want to just keep a watch on their weight, that kind of thing. There's a new bit of kit available to do it.
Yeah, so this lockdown, I decided to get fitter, not fatter. And I have sort of a choice of a lot of different types of smart scales and similar equipment. I chose to use myself something called body cardio scales from Withings. Now, these are expensive. There's a range of them. They top out at about £117, start at about £60. But the body cardio ones, which are the most advanced, obviously measure your weight, but they also work out just by stepping on it your body fat percentage, your water percentage, water you are, percentage muscle, percentage bone. So if you're starting to lose bone mass, it picks that up. Does your heartbeat. But one really good thing it does is something called pulse wave velocity, which is the speed of the pulse of blood as it courses through your arteries. And the reason why that's important is that as people's arteries stiffen, the speed of the blood pulsing through it becomes faster because there's less give in the artery wall. So that's just, instead, it just sort of shoots down the artery. So if that speed is too high, it tells you that your cardiovascular system may stand a little bit of improvement, and it measures all of this literally just by standing on it. It then syncs to the Withings HealthMate app, which is, in my opinion, the best app that I've seen for this sort of thing, and it even draws graphs and things on the screen of the scales themselves, so you can actually see the trend of your weight. It works out your BMI, and it shows you where you are in the range of normal for BMI, weight, percentage fat. If you're dehydrated, it actually shows you both on the screen of the scale but on the app as well. And I found it was really helpful. I'll share this with you. I lost 7.2 kilos in 2 months.
Well done.
But
Withings body cardio scales.
Yeah, because it's like gamifies the whole thing, you know. Yeah. You start to measure it and you start to get competitive with yourself.
Fevzi, lovely talking to you. Thanks ever so much. Thank you.
Pleasure.